All right. Welcome back, everybody. Parshas Pinchas, Tavshin Ayin Tes. Just a disclaimer, like I said, I'm a little bit under the weather, so we might go a little bit short tonight. Just we'll see if I can do it. And also, I realized when I was looking over the material today, I grossly over-prepared for this. So I probably have a lot of material here, more than I usually do. I just have a lot on Pinchas, so I doubt we'll be able to finish it by 9:15. But whatever, I don't finish, I'll amend to the recording, and I'll send out afterwards on the chat. So we'll see how much as we can get in. All right, quick summary, pick up where we left off last week. The Benos Moav enticing many men from Klal Yisrael to be mafkir themselves, given to Znus and Avodah Zarah. This caused a magefa where 24,000 men died. Just to give you some context of the magnitude of this tragedy, 24,000 was many multiples the amount that were killed by the Egel. So you see how immensely serious this was in the eyes of Hashem. And it only stopped when Pinchas killed. He speared Zimri, the Nasi of Shimon, and Cosby, the princess of Midian. And, you know, imagine the courage it took to do that. Zimri was the Nasi. Imagine your boss is doing something, you know, not so kahogan. Would you have the courage to stand up and do something about it? Not necessarily. Usually you're afraid of your boss. But Pinchas was not so. He took the necessary action. So our parsha begins with Hashem praising him for this. He did the right thing in being a kanoi. And we'll discuss exactly what was the virtue of his act and that reward. Hinanino sein lo es brisi sholom, a special bris of peace. Also, bris kehunas olam, Pinchas and his children were now zochet to be kohanim. They weren't until that point. Continuing on, Hashem doesn't just let Midian off the hook for ensnaring so many Jews. He gives Klal Yisrael a direct sivoy to harass them and attack them. Sararis amidyonim v'yikisim osam. And we'll go into more detail about that. Hashem tells Moshe and Elazar to conduct a new census of all men over the age of 20, which comes out to 601,730, not including Shevet Levi. Just as a point of reference, back in Bamidbar, the last time we did a census, it came out to 603,550, so the population actually decreased by 2,000, presumably over these 40 years in the Midbar, which just shows the toll of the magefos and the punishments and all the other xeros of Misa for men over 20 over this period of time. And later, we have a separate count of the Levium, which come to 23,000 for all Levium over the age of 1 month, which, unlike the rest of Klal Yisrael, their numbers went up slightly. Since Bamidbar, it was 22,000 then, now it's 23,000. The reason for the new census was for Yerusha, as the Psukim spelled out, and as now the Torah moves into the topic of Yerusha. The Pasuk says, La'ela techaleka aretz benachla b'mispar shemos. Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those counted in the census, and the location for each Shevet's Yerusha would be determined by a goral, by a lottery. We then have the mice of the Benos Slavchad, right? They approached Moshe Rabbeinu, and they made their case to get a Nachla from their father, who left behind no sons. And we'll get into the details of that in a few minutes. But Moshe takes the case to Hashem, who agrees and says the daughter does have a right to her father's Nachla, his estate, if there are no sons. We'll get into that in a second. And the Torah then tells us how Moshe and Hashem begin to plan for Moshe's death. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ale al har ho'avarim hazer re'es arz asher nasafil v'nei Yisrael," to climb to the top of har ho'avarim, and he could see Eretz Yisrael before he dies. And from there, we see Moshe asking for Hashem to appoint a successor, and Hashem chooses Yoshua, and we'll discuss the dynamics of that and why that was. And from here, the Torah abruptly moves into the last few aliyos of the Parsha, discussion of the Karban Tamid and the Karbanos of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and all the various Yom Tovim until the end of the Parsha, right? Rosh Chodesh, the laning for Rosh Chodesh, the laning, all the Maftirs for the Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmi Atzeres, making Pinchas one of the real value Parshios to learn if you only lane sporadically. So that's Pinchas in a nutshell, another jam-filled Parsha, lots to cover, so let's just not take any more time summarizing. We'll dive right in, and we'll see what we can learn, try to understand from some of these topics. All right, number one. Like we mentioned at the outset, at the end of Parshas Bilam, who had failed in his attempts to curse Klal Yisrael, he does get them eventually on some level. His advice to Balak to have the women entice them to Znus and Avodah Zarah results in the death of 24,000 men, only stopped when Pinchas, Shishkebabs, Zimri, and Cosby, who were participants in this massive era. And the Parsha discusses the reward. Hinanino sein lo es brisi shalom. He gets a bris shalom. He gets the kahuna. So what did he do that was so good? That's the question. What did Pinchas do that was so good? So it says the Pasuk, oh, he shiv es chamosi mi al b'nei Yisrael. He stopped Hashem from getting angry. How so? Bekano is kinasi besocham. He performed an act of kina in place of Hashem having to do it. So therefore, velochilisi es bnei Yisrael bekinasi. The work was done, kina was executed, and there was no need for Hashem to act any further. So says Rashi, bekatzpo es haktsav shehayali liktsof. Hashem was going to get angry and exact punishment, but Pinchas acted in Hashem's place. He did Hashem's work, and therefore there was no need for Hashem to do anything further. So says Rav Moshe in Drash Moshe on page Aleph, he uses Pshat and Rashi to teach us a very valuable lesson. And this is a yisod that extends well beyond Pinchas.
What did
Pinchas do again? He speared the Nasi of Shimon with Zimri and Cosby and stopped the Magefa, the Znus and the Avodah Zarah that was going on. So says Rav Moshe, what was the virtue of Pinchas' act? It's that he did Hashem's job. He gives an example based on the Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara there says, famous thing, Turnus Rufus was a Roman general who was speaking to Rabbi Akiva, and he says, oh, your God, Hashem, he loves the poor so much? He loves Aniyim? If he loves Aniyim, then why doesn't he give them a livelihood? Why does he make them poor if Hashem loves Aniyim? So Rabbi Akiva answers, Kadesha Nitzel Anu Bahen Medina Shel Gehenim. It's for us. He could, Hashem could feed everyone, but it's for us, he is giving us the schus that when we're mefarnes aniyim, it's for us to protect us from Gehenna. Meaning Rabbi Akiva is saying, Echanami, it's Hashem's job to feed and clothe and shelter the poor, but by doing Hashem's job for him, we are accomplishing something unbelievable, unbelievable schusim. He gives a mushal of Moshe. Imagine a mother who's like schlepping heavy packages from Stop and Shop, and he's got all this stuff, and her 5-year-old son comes and says, can I carry something for you? So, you know, he can't carry very much. He's 5. So the mother gives him some toilet paper, something light to carry. So is he really doing that much? No, because the mother is still carrying the bulk of the packages. But the fact that he even asked, the fact that he asked to help, and he's just, you know, he's carrying the, you know, the toilet paper, that is an unbelievable thing in the eyes of Hashem. So too here, when Pinchas volunteered to do Hashem's work for him, that showed such an immense amount of love for Hashem, it was enough to halt the Magefa. And so too with us, when we help out the poor, when we get stuck, when we do chesed, are we doing a substitute for Hashem? Are we in his place? Certainly not. He still carries all the heavy packages. But the fact that we try to help out a little bit, Hashem sees how badly we want to help and how much we love him, and that causes Hashem an unbelievable amount of simcha. Also, Bris Mila. He asked the question of Bris Mila, how come Hashem doesn't just make babies born circumcised to begin with? It's because Hashem wants us to be involved. By showing that desire for involvement in Kedusha, it's Kedesha Nitzel Anu Bahen Medina Shel Gehenim. Mirtz Hashem to shower us with all the zchusim that are coming to us by doing the work of Hashem. So, you know, Mirtz Hashem, we should take on, you know, this mantle too. This is the virtue of the act of Pinchas because he partnered with Hashem. Our job, you know, is to partner with Hashem. And yes, it's Hashem's achrayus to take care of the world, but, you know, we could help. We could get involved, whether it be financially, maybe in terms of helping people out financially, or in terms of socially, or in terms of just being a good friend, a neighbor who may be ill. Yes, Hashem is the Rofei Cholam, but that's his job, but we could help. We could help cheer him up. And nothing makes Hashem happier than helpers. That's A. B, another virtue of Hashem's act, another explanation of why it was so good and why he was rewarded. We know the Gemara in Brachos on Dav Zayin says that Bilam knew that for 1 second of the day, Hashem is angry. The tafkid of that 1 second of the day is to punish Rishoim. So Bilam was able to determine that moment, and he wanted to say, Kalim, he wanted to say, destroy them during that 1 second. That was how he planned to curse them. So says the Gemara, to prevent this, Hashem didn't get mad at all during this time, right? Hashem did not get mad at all during this time to prevent Bilam from executing his plan. So says the Or Gedalia, Rav Gedalia Shor, the Pinchas was Bilam was a smart guy, and he saw that Hashem removed that 1 second a day window. So he reasoned, without that 1 second of the day of Hashem's anger, right, that means that the world has lost its source of Yira Shemayim, its inherent embedded fear of doing something wrong because Hashem will get angry and punish him. That 1 second of the day when he punished Hashem is gone. So now mankind lost the Midah of Yira Shemayim. So therefore, without Yira Shemayim, the time was ripe to try and tempt them with Znus and the Benos Moav and Taivos. And so Bilam did just that, and he was very successful because the sense of reverence in Yira Shemayim was lost in the world. So Hashem was mad. That's what the Pasuk says, Vayichar Af Elokim Ki Olechu. Hashem was mad that his Af, his anger had to be turned off, Kivyachol. So what did Pinchas do? What was the virtue of Pinchas' act? The greatness? That when he skewered Zimri and Cosby, in a very violent display, Pinchas, as Rishor, Pinchas restored the Midah of Yira into the world. Not from Hashem in the 1 second of being angry being reinstituted. That was still on vacation. But through that very public spectacle, as the Medrash points out, spearing them, the Medrash says he speared them, he lifted them up as an example to the rest of Klal Yisrael. Thereby, Yira Shemayim was restored. He jolted it back into them, something that had been missing. And therefore, it stopped the Magefa. V'lo chilisi es b'nei Yisrael b'kenasi. Hashem didn't destroy them because Pinchas rightfully restored Yira Shemayim to the world, the Yira that was lost. And I think there's a very strong message here for us in Tav Shinayin Tes. You know, nowadays, the focus is always on Avas Hashem. Rightfully so. Peace and love and beauty and brightness and Hashem loves you. And that's a good thing and it's a true thing. Given the generation we have, it's probably a necessary thing to focus on that. But sometimes that reality that we focus only on Ava and love results in a lack of Yira. Maybe that's why there's more talking in shuls than there's ever been in the history of mankind. Because everything is about Ava today and there's no sense of Yira. Maybe this is why people aren't afraid about, you know, pulling out a cell phone during davening anymore. Or why this is why people sometimes treat Rebbeim like they're one of the gang and they're not necessarily don't have that sense of Yira anymore. Ava is a good thing, and our generation probably needs a good dose of it, more than Yira, but it's a good thing to have some Yira in there also, to have a certain sense of reverence for what it means to be in shul, to have a certain reverence for Rabbonim. It's a good thing to have. So Amir Tashem, that was Pinchas, and that's what Pinchas restored, which Bilam had taken away. So Amir Tashem, you know, yeah.
So the Ur Gedalia is saying that Pinchas restored Yiras Hashem.
Right, that Bilam, through his trickery, Hashem had to remove his Yira from the world. That's how he was able to get Klal Yisrael to be Nichshol. And the Midah of Pinchas is that he restored Yira to the world by committing this very, you know, violent, horrific act, and he restored Yira to the world. Bekano es kinasi besocham, velo chilisi es b'nei Yisrael bekinasi. So, Emir Tashem, we can embody this, right? You know, before we talk in shul, before we're mezalzel the kavod of a certain mitzvah, in some way to feel the Yira, the sense of how could I possibly do such a thing? It's good to say that once in a while. How could I possibly do such a thing? That's a necessary thing. It's a necessary thing to be a good Jew, to have that Yira, to have it be felt more often in our society, the pangs of Yira Shemayim, and that was the Midah of Pinchas. So if we can embody this a little bit more, Mirtzah Shem, we should be zochet to the brachos of Pinchas, hineni nosein lo es brisi shalom, menucha and shalom for us and our families. That's point A. I'm not going to finish tonight because I'm a little bit under the weather today. I'm going a little bit slower. I'm a little bit whatever, but we'll do as much as we can, and I'll try and I'll get everything in on the recording. So after the chaos and the drama of Pinchas, now Zimri and Cusbi were killed. The plague is over. Hashem rewards him with Brisi Shalom and the Kahuna. There's still plenty of hard feelings going around for the instigators of this whole episode, and that was Moav and Midyan. And in that spirit, Hashem doesn't forget about them. The Pasuk says right afterwards, Sororis amidyanim, harass them, vikisam osam, and actually go to war against them, because they, kitzorim heim lachem, because they cause Klal Yisrael distress for enticing the men, and number two, to actually wipe them out. So interestingly, it's only Midyan represented here, mentioned here. Sororis amidyanim, even though both Moav and Midyan had their women involved. In fact, it started with Benos Moav, right? The Pasuk says Benos Moav were the instigators, and only later Midyan came along and sent their royalty in the form of Cusbi, the princess. So why is that? Why does Moav get a pass? There's several reasons. We mentioned last week Moav comes from Lot, who had the schus of Avram Avinu, who had the schus of helping Avram Avinu in Mitzrayim, so they have special protection. The Pasuk says in Devarim, Al Tatsar es Moav yal tiskar bar milchama. That's the Lashon of Tsoror again, right? Al Tatsar es Moav. Don't soror them. Don't distress them. Don't provoke them to war, because Klal Yisrael was not destined to inherit the land of Moav. But primarily, as the Mefarshim point out, why is Moav afforded some protection? It says, "Ves Moav lo tziva lahashmid." Why? Bipnei Rus. Rus was destined to come from Moav, and from her we have David HaMelech, and from David HaMelech we have Mashiach, so we don't want to be messing with that lineage too much. We don't want to be messing with that bloodline. So Klal Yisrael stays away from Moav. And Hashem will deal with their punishment, however Hashem deals with their punishment. But let's look at Midyan. Pasuk focuses on Midyan, so we'll focus on Midyan. We have a direct sivui to go get them, to make them suffer. What specifically made their crime so egregious? Now, the crime enticing the men of Klal Yisrael, that was certainly bad enough, but the Mefarshim explain, Midyan went above and beyond. Two ways. Rashi and the Ramban both explain that Moav was in the direct path on their way to Eretz Yisrael. To get to Eretz Yisrael, to get where Hashem wanted to cross the Yarden by Yericho, they had to cut through Moab's territory. So Moab, you could say, they were acting defensively. They were doing something. They're going to invade us. We have to fight back. Midian was not in their path. Midian was a different geography. They came onto the scene only because of their hatred of Jews. This is the first element of real anti-Semitism in the world. Just attacking them because they hated Jews. So much so, the Mefarshim say that that's why they sent Cusby. Cusby was royalty. She's from the royal family. Imagine, you know, the royal family engaging in something like this. It's because so much was their hatred for Jews, they went beyond normal tactics to send their royal family into this. And that's how deep their hatred was. And therefore, the Pasuk says, Midian went above and beyond, and therefore we have a special tzivui. Tzororis Midian. They should suffer for this. They should suffer for this. Mida keneged mida, for the suffering they caused you. That's Rashi and the Ramban. There's a very long Orach Chaim, which I was able to fit onto this one page base. I actually couldn't. I left off the last few paragraphs. But he says that there are two parts to this tzivoy to mess with Midyan. Sororis on Midyan, and make them suffer. That's A. And number two, Vikisim Osam, wipe them out. So this, the latter is discussed next week in the actual war with Midyan. Vyas Malche Midyan Hargu al Chaleim. We learn it. We talk about that next week in Matis Masei. And they also killed Bilam, Bes Bilam ben Baor, Hargu Becharev. That part is Mefurish and Matos next week. But what does the former mean? Right? What does the former mean? Tsaror Esamidyam, harass them, make them suffer. How does Kal Yisrael, how are we Mekayim that? How are we Mekayim? I understand, go to war, fight them, kill them. How do we Mekuyim this tzivoy of make them suffer? It seems like a something that is not Mefurish, how they works out. So the Orach Chaim explains, the kiyum of tzororis amidyonim is not a physical thing. It doesn't mean physically make them suffer. It means being in a mindset of hatred, of despising what they did, a hatred for what they stood for, znus and avodah zarah, both of which ignited Klal Yisrael's nature hara, natural yetzer hara for these things. And once they're ignited, it's very hard to walk it back, to eradicate it. So tzororis amidyonim doesn't mean something we do to them, it means something we do to ourselves. The only way to combat the yetzer hara for znus and avodah zarah is to mold ourselves into Jews who embody a mindset of hatred and intolerance for that sort of behavior. We see this all the time in our own lives. Let's say a person really wants to stop speaking Lashon Hara. He's a problem with Lashon Hara, and he really wants to stop speaking Lashon Hara. The problem is, it's enjoyable to speak Lashon Hara. Gossip is enjoyable. It's an enjoyable thing. It's not like something that, it's not really good anyway. It's an enjoyable thing. So how do you stop it? It's physics. It's physics 101. It's Newton's third law of motion, right? Every force has an equal and opposite force. You need a force to combat the force that is propelling you to speak Lashon Hara. What is that force? What is the equal and opposite force? Hatred. Hatred, now, like I said, my uncle always says, hate is a strong word. And it's right. Usually we shouldn't hate things, and we shouldn't, we should learn to love. But hatred, everything that Hashem does has a purpose, has a virtue to it. The virtue of hatred is to combat bad midos. That if we are able to train ourselves to hate Lashon Hara as much as it's enjoyable to speak Lashon Hara, that's the only way we can combat it. So, for znus, for avodah zarah, for any bad midah, the only way to stop it is to train ourselves to be disgusted by it. And that passion, that negative energy, creates the necessary force to combat what Midyan did at that time. That's why tzororis amidyanim. The only way you can stop znus and avodah zarah is to train yourself to be equally as strong, connected that force. And so too, that's how we combat our own taivos in this time. So no, the Orach Chaim is not giving license to harass people, to throw rocks at cars on Shabbos. That's not what he's saying, but hatred means. Hatred means the mindset of disgust for committing an avera. That when you commit an avera, you should be disgusted by it. Maybe it is enjoyable, and there is a certain pleasure in fulfilling a taiva, granted, but there should be a disgust for it. And if that disgust is high enough, tzororis amidyanim, that's how we can combat taivos in our lives. So Mir Tashem, we can employ this in a healthy way, certainly in a healthy way, because hatred can become very unhealthy if it's not used correctly, and in that schus be granted siyata d'shmaya to fight the midyans of our time, to fight the taivos that we should be fighting, and from those efforts see nothing but bracha v'atzlacha. All right, next. I apologize, I'm going a little bit slower than usual, but we'll get there. The famous maisa in this week's parasha of the Bnos Tzlafchad. Five daughters of Tzlafchad come to Moshe Rabbeinu to complain. Avinu meis ba midbar, their father died in the midbar. machlokas how that was, whether he was the Mekoshesh Eitzim or he was one of the Mapila, many different answers here. But we do know, he wasn't part of Korach's mob, and rather he died because of his own private sin. Ki becheto meis. And because their father had no sons, they wanted to be Yorishim in the land that he would have received in Eretz Yisrael, and they were upset that the halacha was not on their side. Lama yigara Hashem avinu mitoch mishpachto. If we, his only children, don't inherit him, his name will be lessened from his nachla in Eretz Yisrael, and it passes on to somebody else. How is that fair, and how is that just? So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know what to tell them, so he takes the matter to Hashem, to Paskin, and Hashem indeed sides with the b'no slavcha. Kain b'no slavcha dovros. They make a good point. Nason titein lahem achuzas nachla b'socha achei avi. So the halachas clarify that if a man dies with no sons, his daughters are Yorishim, and here the Beno Slavchad should indeed get the land there at Yisrael alongside their uncles, Slavchad's own brothers. A side point to this, the Gemara in Tainus relates what happens at the end of Parashas Maaseh, at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, that this halacha was fine and good, but then Slavchad's relatives come to Moshe with a follow-up concern, right? If we allow them to inherit their father, then they can marry someone from Shevet Reuven, and then they'll have children, and then those children inherit the land, and now land that should have been within the Nachla of Menashe is now part of, let's say, Shevet Reuven. So how is that fair? So Moshe takes it back to Hashem again. Hashem paskins, we have the halacha, that for these B'no Slavchad, and for those the people in that time of the Nachla and the Goral, they had to marry within their Shevet. And so the Pasuk says, they married Livnei Dodeim L'Noshim. The B'no Slavchad married their cousins. And this halacha lasted for many years until Eretz Yisrael was finally divided up. Once Eretz Yisrael was conquered and divided up, the halacha reverted that women could marry from any Shevet she wanted. And this Psak was reversed on Tu B'Av. Is one of the reasons that Tu B'Av is a Simcha Dik day, because on that day, undoubtedly, Shidduchim became a lot easier. I'm going to try something interesting tonight. There are three parties here in this story. There's the B'no Slavchad, there's Moshe, and then there's Hashem. So I want to talk about an idea related to each of the three, related to this story. So what's an idea about B'no Slavchad within this story, an idea of Moshe Rabbeinu within this story, an idea of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself within this story. First, regarding the B'no Slavchad themselves, the Meshech Chachma points out in our Parsha, is a lot of Yichus spelled out. One of the themes of Parsha's Pinchas is Yichus. We see it in the beginning. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Why are we going back to his grandfather? Why is that important? By B'no Slavchad. B'no Slavchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. L'mishpachos Menashe ben Yosef. Why are we going back so far? So the Pasuk, why is that? Why do we trace it back, even back to Yosef HaTzadik, generations earlier? So it says the Meshech Chacham, it's to teach us that who we are to a certain extent, it's our own kochos, it's our own individualities, our own idiosyncrasies, but to a certain extent, we are who we came from. That who we are based on what our parents did, how good they did, good a job they did in chinuch, what our grandparents did, and so forth. So, how so? So Pinchas went out on a limb to do what he did when he killed Zimri and Cosby and stopped the Magepha. Why? Why did he go out on a limb? Because Elazar went out on a limb. When he stopped the people from wanting to return to Mitzrayim after Aaron died and they lost the Ananiya Kavod. It's the Gemara, it's Yerushalmi in Yuma that Elazar did this. So he had the midah of going out on the limb. Why did Elazar go out on the limb? Because Aaron, his father, had the midah of being, let's call it bold. Boldness was a midah of their family. When was he bold? When he volunteered to help them construct the Egel so he can stall for the time to try and stop the Avodah Zarah for as long as possible in the hopes Moshe Rabbeinu would come back. So this midah of boldness was in the family. So Pinchas embodied that need of his family, which is being bold. So too the B'no Slavchad. Says the Meshech Chachma, we see this also from the Medrash, that they loved Eretz Yisrael. The Sifri, right, they had such a love for Eretz Yisrael, the B'no Slavchad, they demanded a Nachla in it. Why did they love Eretz Yisrael so much? Because their family did. Who'd they come from? All the way back to Menashe, who's, you know, him and Ephraim didn't even grow up in Eretz Yisrael. They grew up in Mitzrayim. And their father Yosef, you know, his last wish in life was to take his bones out and be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So we see the meat of this family was a certain love, a certain avas Eretz Yisrael. So the yesod is, and therefore it kept going through the generations. It was almost a genetic trait to the family all the way to the B'nos Slavchad. So the yesod is that what we do, our values and our actions are not performed in a vacuum. Our children and then their children and their children pick up on it to some extent. And it becomes who they are. And this runs two ways. It could be for good. It could also be for bad. If you have a temper, there's a good chance your kids may develop a temper and their kids may develop a temper. It works for good midos and for bad midos. So this, you know, underscores the importance of chinuch, of making sure that our kids see us doing the right things to make sure that that carries forward. That's a midah of the benos slavcha themselves, the genetics, their yichus within this story. B, what about Moshe Rabbeinu, the second participant in this story? So the question is asked by many mefarshim. I understand their argument. Avinu meis b'midbar, our father died, ki ein lo bein. It's not fair. It's not fair. That's their argument. It's a good argument. Hashem is maskim. It's a good argument. Why did they throw in an extra line? They weren't involved in the rebellion of Korach. What difference does them being involved with Adas Korach have to do with Yerusha and Nachla? And if they were involved with Korach, this wouldn't be a good argument of my father left no sons? Because Risharim don't inherit anymore? I think Risharim can still inherit their fathers. What is this? What's going on over here? So the Chafetz Chaim teaches a very important yesod. And he says it wasn't important. It has nothing to do with Yerusha. Objectively, that's true. But on a subconscious level, they might have been trying to butter up Moshe Rabbeinu a little bit, right? Hey, Moshe, our father wasn't with you, against you. He stood with you. He wasn't with Korach. This is their form of like the wink and the nod, in the hopes that these words may persuade Moshe to be a bit more sympathetic and an advocate for their cause. Says the Chafetz Chaim, Moshe saw this from a mile away. He knew that this might be perceived as being nogeya bedavar, as taking like a verbal bribe, a verbal shochad from the benos slavchad. And therefore, even though the Chafetz Chaim actually goes the pshat is that Moshe didn't know how to paskin. The Chafetz Chaim says he might have known how to paskin. He might have known how to paskin, but what's the lawyer word? He recused himself from the case, right? He recused himself from the case because he might be perceived as being nogeya bedavar. So from this, we see the unbelievable tzidkus of Moshe Rabbeinu, the self-awareness to know when there was negius, and a lesson to all of us how careful we need to be when it comes to being nogeya bedavar and something, to not allow ourselves to paskin decisions, day-to-day decisions in our own lives, simply because of potential leanings we may have one way or another. That's B, regarding the makeup and the tzidkus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Finally, the third party in this story is Hashem himself, Ribono Shel Olam. The whole dispute, the taina of the Bnos Slavchad, was about the division of land in Eretz Yisrael amongst the Shvatim. And the Torah in our parsha lays out the rules. There are rules for that Yerusha, and that Nachla. What's the main rule? L'rav tarbe nachlaso v'lama'at tamit nachlaso. Large Shvatim get big pieces of land, smaller Shvatim get smaller pieces of land. Makes sense. Pretty poshut. The Svasemes, of course, gives pshat in this pasuk, as he always does, through a lens of pnimius, through a lens of chasidus, and he says as follows, that this pasuk is a metaphor for how Hashem operates in the world. L'rav, a person who wants to live a life of rav, of expansiveness, he says, Misha chafetz l'harchiv libo ba'asoga satora. He's always on the move, he's doing, he's speaking, he's acting, he's a bundle of energy, he lives an expansive, panoramic life. Hashem will give him opportunities to live that kind of a life. Vila ma'at, someone who wants to live a life of ma'at, a quiet life, a modest life of Avodas Hashem, not necessarily flashy and expansive, but within his Dalet Amos and his family and his community, tam'it es nachalaso. Hashem will help him facilitate that way of living, of anova and tranquility. So this is a concept that we've discussed in this chabur before. It's the yesod of b'derech sha'adam rotze lelelech. However you really, really want to live your life, Hashem is molichin oso. Hashem will help you. Hashem will help a person down the path that he wants to go on. Whether it's the path Hashem may have chosen for him, that's not Hashem. We have hashgah. We have b'chir chafshis. B'chir chafshis means we choose our path. And however we genuinely choose our path, Hashem will help us go down that path. However, this extends to the mice of the Bnos Slavchad. How does this concept of B'derech Sha'adam Rotze Lelech Molichin also extend to the Bnos Slavchad? Says an amazing thing, it says the Sfas Emes. Why didn't Moshe know the halacha? Let's go back. Let's not assume like the Chafetz Chaim that he may have known it, but he deferred, he recused himself. Let's assume he didn't know the halacha. Why didn't Moshe know the halacha? So the Kamshad is because in Dvarim, which we read in a couple weeks, he says, the Pasuk says, based going back to Yisro now, Va'adavar asher yikshe mikem, all the hard kashas, takrivuni la'yushmateh, bring them to me. The Zakenim will answer all an onion in a pot kashas, but all the difficult kashas of whatever it is, bring to Moshe Rabbeinu. So this, the push-up shot is this reeked of arrogance a little bit. So therefore, he was punished that when a tough psak came his way, he didn't know the halacha because it was almost, he was bragging a little bit that, bring me all the hard kashas. So therefore, he was punished by not knowing the halacha. Says the Sfas Emes, no, absolutely not. He wasn't arrogant. Moshe was anav mikol adam. He was the most humble person in the whole world. How was he arrogant? What was happening here? Says the Sfas Emes, based on this pshat, since Moshe chose the latter, the lama'at, tam'it es nachlaso, he was a lama'at Jew. He was a life of humility. Therefore, Hashem was mamit es nachloso. Hashem provided him a construct to be humble. Moshe wanted to be a humble person, so Hashem gave him a construct to be humble. How so? He gave him the anivus, an experience to live that anivus, that when he didn't know halacha. When you know how to pasken a shayla, Hashem basically says, you want to live a life of humility? Here. Here's an opportunity to live a life of humility. You don't know how to pasken the shayla. That says the Sfas Emes. It wasn't a punishment. It was saying Moshe chose a certain course of his life, and Hashem was facilitating him living that way in his life. So we see from here, this should give us chizuk as well, that if we want something genuinely, and we devote ourselves to being that way, Hashem will indeed help us get there. So in summary, we learn a lesson about all three parties in this incident. The B'no Slavka themselves, and the importance of chinuch and yichus from the Meshech Chachma. We learn about Moshe and the importance of being self-aware from the Chafetz Chaim, and the Rabbonu Shalom, that he's always there helping us facilitate where we want to take our lives. B'derech sha'adam rotze leilech molichan oso, and to make sure it's the right choice from the Sfas Emes. And if we can embody these ideas, Mir Tashem, we should be zocha to the brachos of the B'no Slavcha. Nason titein lohem achuzas nachla, a beautiful Yerusha of chiyas and simcha for us and our families. All right, so I'm probably going to end off a little bit early. I'm not, like I said, I'm not feeling so well today. So I'll do one more idea. We have 10 minutes till Marv, and we'll stop with there, and I will, I'll do the last couple. I have a few more ideas afterward, but I'll put it on the recording, and I'll send it out probably tonight or tomorrow morning. So in our parsha, as part of the preparation for Moshe Rabbeinu's death, he asks for Hashem to appoint a successor. Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Right? The expression of Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar, the God of Ruchos L'chol Basar to all mankind, is a very strange way of referring to Hashem. Right? Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar, what is this referring to? What's pshat in referring to Hashem in this way? So Rashi says, it's based on the Medrash. Amar lefanav Ribbono shel Olam galu lefanecha daito shekol echad ve'echad ve'ein dom zel lazeh mane aleha manig sheisovel kol echad ve'echad lefi daito. Hashem, you know the inner nature of every person, Elokei Haruchos, you know the ruach of every person, how no two people are alike. So in that regard, please appoint a leader who understands this as well and treats every person according to their individual character. We mentioned in previous Chaburos, the Midah of Moshe Rabbeinu was that he was Kol Al Hadash Shel Kol Yisrael. He was able to put himself in other people's shoes and see through their eyes and their experiences. And says Rashi, he wanted to ensure from Hashem, Elokei Haruchos, that his successor should have the same Midah. That's Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar. But another idea I saw comes from the Berditchever, from the Kedushas Levi. He says that inevitably, and we all know this to be true, this is common sense, there are times in the pursuit of our material needs in this world that it may cause out to miss out a little bit on Ruchnius, right? I travel all the time to Raleigh, North Carolina for work. There are no Jews in Raleigh, North Carolina. So unfortunately, sometimes I can't make a minyan. That's the perfect example of sometimes for a parnasa, you're put in a situation where it's sad and it's unfortunate and it rings you up inside, but you can't reach your maximum level of ruchnius at certain times. This is the Kedushas Levi. Every Jew experiences this one way or another, that we have to pull back on something. Maybe we're very busy with something and therefore we have to miss a chavrusa one night, you know, because, you know, our wife needed us to go to the store and we have to go to the store. She needs this. She's sick in bed with the flu and the kids are whatever, and we have to miss our chavrusa. This is an example that in the pursuit of material needs, sometimes a person has to pull back on their ruchnis a little bit. It's an unfortunate thing, but it's a common thing. But says the Kedushas Levi, I'm just finding the line, Yesh lilmod zchus al Yisrael ma she'enan osin ratzon habari b'tzmidus kamalachim. The fact that we're not perfect, like angels, should chas v'shalom drive a wedge between us and Hashem. And Hashem knows this. The Midah of Hashem, says the Berditchever, is that he doesn't expect perfection. He expects effort and a push to be better. But an imperfect result is not unexpected. Right? So says the Kedushas Levi, this is also the Midah of a good leader. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see in his successor. What's that? To be melamed zchus. To be melamed zchus on people, to give them the benefit of the doubt, and not just kick them to the curb because of imperfections, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was beseeching Hashem to choose his successor based on the capacity to find the good in Klal Yisrael, even when their actions would eventually, inevitably, fall short sometimes, right? That's pshat in Elokei Haruchos, and so Hashem does that. Why does he choose Yoshua? Why Yoshua? Because the Pasuk says, Yoshua was who? Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Yeshua had that ruach about him, the ability to see beyond imperfections, to not have that damage the overall relationship and be melamed zchus. And so too, you know, this teaches the importance for us about being melamed zchus on people, to view a mistake as a mistake, to view an imperfection as an imperfection, but to never allow that to tarnish the essence of a Jew, which is ultimately a beautiful and pristine. So two ideas into the makings of a leader, the ability to be kol hadas, she'll call Yisrael, someone who can relate to the uniqueness of the individual, from Rashi. And number two, to be melamed zchus, to see the good in people even when they're not perfect, from the Kedushas Levi. A final qualification, which we'll finish here for tonight, that Moshe wanted for Yoshua, I saw from the Sridei Esh, who I have not used so far in this Chabura, this Rav Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha, and he says as follows, besides for these ideas in Ruchos, and Isha She'er Ruach Bo, Elokei Ruchos, Moshe has a second criteria for what the leader should be, besides a person of ruach. The pasuk says, "Asher yetzei lifneihem, v'asher yavo lifneihem, v'asher yotziim, v'asher yaviim." He should go before them and come before them. He'll lead them in and bring them out. Lead them out, bring them in. It sounds like he's saying the same thing four times, right? Asher yetzei lifneihem, asher yavo lifneihem, asher yotziim, v'asher yaviim. It sounds like a lot of apparent redundancy here. So what does this mean? So some say it refers to Gashmias and Ruchnias, that's Rashi's pshat, that, you know, just like, you know, a leader has to lead in both areas. He can't just sit in his palace, he has to lead the army, he has to be on the front lines, but also he has to lead through his schuyos, through his mitzvos, through his good example he has to lead. I think that's Rashi's pshat. But the Sridei Esh says it's weiter than that. A leader needs two things. You need two things to be a good leader. And this applies to a king. It applies to being a father, to being a boss. It applies to, how do you be a leader? Asher yetzei lifneihem v'asher yavo lifneihem. He needs to go in front of them, lifneihem, meaning he needs to know what's right and what's wrong and stand up for the MS and to be firm and not bend to, you know, to the fickleness and the winds of society, to lead them, to actually, you know, take a stand on things. But at the same time, asher yotziim v'asher yaviim. If he doesn't speak the language of the people, then he's a leader without followers. He needs to be, you know, he needs to connect. He needs to be friendly, to be relatable, right? It's similar to our pshat in Rashi on Elokei Aruchos. But the chiddush of the Sridei Esh is that one doesn't work without the other, right? If he leads from the front but doesn't make sure people are following, then he's an ineffective leader, in that he has no followers. But if he's a politician and he's just kissing babies all day and he's making stump speeches and just saying what people want to hear, then, you know, he's just a populist and he's also a very ineffective leader. No one respects that. No one genuinely follows that person. So that's the idea of a leader. And so too for us, you know, we're all leaders to a certain extent in our families, in our shuls, in our communities, in our workplaces. And Mir Tashem, we can embody these pieces of advice from Moshe, these little nuggets of what it takes to effectively lead people to places of MS and truth. And that's supposed to be zochet to siyata d'shmaya, to mold ourselves into Jews who represent that bracha of ish asher ruach bo. And I'll stop here. Wish everyone a good Shabbos. I have a few more ideas, but I'll add it to the recording later. All right, so welcome back. This is part two of the shiur that we didn't have enough time to finish before Marv. So just two more ideas in Parshas Pinchas. In this week's parsha, the Torah discusses all the special musafim, the special karbonos that accompany special days, specifically Shabbos and all the Yom Tovim. And before that, the Torah tells us once again about a karbon we've already discussed back in Parshas Tetzaveh, back in Sefer Shmos, and that is the karbon tamid. It's a keves echa taseh v'bokev, it's a keves hasheni taseh bein arbayim, the karbon that starred and finished the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash every single day of the year. And back in Tetzaveh, we initially discussed the sheet of the Ein Yaakov, that the Karban Talmid, Taseh Vesakeves HaEchad, Taseh Bavokeh, Vesakeves HaShini, Taseh Ben Arbayim, Zeklal Gadol B'Torah. This is the fundamental tenet, the fundamental foundation, the pillar of all of Judaism. Why is that? So if you recall, we brought the Maral and the Sivas Olam, who discussed and praised the virtue of tamidus, of consistency, how consistency is the most crucial ingredient in our avodas Hashem. So ayin sham in the Tetzaveh Chabura, that the recording is out there. But I want to tackle a different question here tonight. That why does the Torah reinvigorate the discussion about the Karban Tamid here by the Musafim of Shabbos and Yontiv? Right, the Karban Tamid is not a Musaf, so why does it proceed and introduce us into that discussion? I want to understand that. So, beautiful answer is offered by Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch in his Parish on Chumash, And he says as follows, that the Moadim, a Moed by definition, means a meeting, like the Oel Moed, the tent of meeting, the Mishkan, where Klal Yisrael could meet Hashem. So to the Moadim, the Yom Tovim are, you know, the Yom Tovim in time are what the Mishkan was in space. The Yom Tovim are a time when Klal Yisrael can meet Hashem kivyachol, can connect Hashem in a special way. So it says Rav Hirsch, the Pasuk intentionally drops in another mention of the Karban Tamid, Dafka now, as an introduction to the Moadim to teach us that every day of the year, every day of our lives, whether it's Yontif or not, could be a Moed, could be a time, a moment for unbelievable connection and closeness with Hashem, if we so choose to make it that way, with Torah and Tefillah and Chesed, right? Those things are not reserved for Shabbos and Yontif, right? The inyan of a Moed, the inyan of Musafim, yes, there are special halachos for certain days of the year that make the, you know, the ruchniyistic connection of those times very strong, but the pnimius, that line is always open. You know, that line to be a Moed, to have a connection with Hashem, is always there, even on a, you know, on a Thursday night in July with not a Yontif in sight. And as a remez to this, we have a remez to this in Shulchan Aruch, right? In the Ramah himself, the Ramah's introductory words to Aruch Chaim, very famous, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Sami. That's how the Ramah opens up Aruch Chaim, right? Hashem is always in front of us, looking at us. We should be cognizant of that and always acknowledge that Hashem is looking at us and in front of us. But then all the way at the end of Aruch Chaim, you know, 600 plus simonim later, the Ramah concludes Aruch Chaim with the words by Purim Katan, V'tov Lev Mishte Tamid. Again, the word Tamid. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid starts, Shulchan Aruch starts Aruch Chaim, and V'tov Lev Mishte Tamid finishes Aruch Chaim. So it's referring there at the end to being Besimcha, even on Purim Katan, an Adar Aleph. But the Yisod is that it's always to be Besimcha, knowing that you're in front of the Rabbona Sholem. So we see, again, Aruch Chaim, which are the halachos of daily life, begins and ends with what? With Tamidus, with Tamid, with the inyan of consistency as the overarching prerequisite to all of halacha, both in our avodas Hashem and following Torah mitzvos, the daily grind, the nitty gritty, but also in our attitude and relationship with Hashem and the care and maintenance that relationship should demand from us all the time. And this is arguably, the greatest tragedy of Shavuos Betamuz, which we just had this past Sunday. You know, it was not the walls of Yerushalayim being breached or the Sifrei Torah being burnt or even Moshe breaking the Luchos, right? There are many things that happened on Shavuos Betamuz. But rather, I would argue that, like the Gemara in Taina says on Chof Vav Amud Beis, the greatest tragedy of Shavuos Betamuz was potentially Ubatel HaTamid. They ran out of supplies and animals in the base of Migdash, and therefore they had to stop bringing the carbon on a daily basis, right? That loss of consistency, the loss of continuity, the tragic blow to this Klal Gadol B'Torah, the loss of the reminder that Hashem's door is open 24/7, 365 days a year, rain or shine, Ubatel HaTamid. It was almost like Hashem's door was now closed, Chas V'Shalom. And that's the crux, that's the pnimius of why this day, why that day, Shavuos Betamuz, was and still is so sad and so tragic. Another interesting tidbit in the Karban Tamid. That when we begin discussing it, the Torah uses Lashon Rabim. Tishmeru la'akriv li b'moado. Tishmeru, you, plural, should be makrivit in the correct time. And then Zeho Yishe, asher takrivu. Right, this carbon, you, plural, should be makriv. But almost immediately, in the next pasuk, the Torah switches. Esakeves echad ta'aseh baboker. One sheep, you, Lashon Yachad, singular, should prepare it in the morning. So why the sudden switch? The seemingly, Rabim Yachad confusion. What do we learn from it? So I saw an interesting idea from the Ksav Sofer on this. He says that Bichlal, in general, Hashem doesn't want us to be insular. In general, acting as a Yachid is not a good thing, to act as a Yachid on our own little island of Ruchnius. But rather, the Yisod is to participate in mitzvos of the tzibor, right? The classic carbon tzibor is the carbon tamid. Why? Very simple. Because like in most things, the power of a large unified group of people combining their efforts, you know, far exceeds that of a group of yechidim working by themselves. Ki ish echad b'lev echad. As a tzibor, we can accomplish so much more in our avodas Hashem. That's why we say on the Yom Nerayim that Hashem always listens to the tfilos of a united tzibor much more than he does to the individual davening for the same thing. So here the psukim begin describing the carbon tamid a belushan rabim, because be'etzem that's what it is, but the rabim participating, the tzibor. However, Hashem, the pasuk is maskim, that a person may think that by joining in, says the ksav sofer, maybe he's getting lost in the crowd, maybe the yachid finds the karban tamid to be unfulfilling, because personally they play such a small, insignificant role in the performance. So should you think that, should you have that havamina, the pasuk switches back to lashon yachid to teach us what? No. That if that's what you think about the karban tamid, kamash malan, that each and every individual is credited with the full performance, the full kiyum of this mitzvah. So another yesod, another lesson of the karban tamid based on the ksav sofer, is to teach us the value of being part of a tzibor. Something which very often people shy away from because they prefer to go at it alone. There's a comfort zone, but that's the wrong attitude. Being part of a tzibor in Avodas Hashem is crucial to get the maximum result because it pools everyone's kochos together. So just to review, Mirtz Hashem, we can embody these lessons of the Karban Tamid. Number one, to never shy away from involving ourselves in inyanim of the tzibor, because that's where our maximum potential for ruchnius lies, from the ksav sofer. And the first idea from Rav Hirsch and the Ramah, to always remember that every day, every second, every moment is an opportunity to do good and to connect with Hashem, that olas tamid, right, the opportunities for kedusha, for a moed, a meeting with Hashem that we encounter every day, are what? Where is the olas tamid? Ho'asuya bahar Sinai, like the pasuk says. They stem from kedusha Sinai just as much as the opportunities of the quote-unquote special days throughout the year. Meaning we don't need to wait for Shabbos or for Yom Kippur. You know, tonight's marv could be unbelievably special, just like by Sinai. Tomorrow's learning, tomorrow's kovei itim, tomorrow's daf yomi could arouse tremendous, unimaginable kochos of chesed and love and brightness and meaning, just like Sinai. And to never forget that, the great opportunity that consistently lies right in front of us if we just choose to grab it. So Mirtz Hashem, we can and we will. And in that schus, reciprocally, we should all be zocha to be the recipients of the bracha of the Karban Tamid, the reach nichoach, that special closeness with Hashem, b'tmidus, on a consistent basis. Last idea for tonight. We mentioned the end of our parsha, the final few aliyos, deal with the karbonos, the musafim, and some other halachos regarding the moadim of the various yomim tovim, inclusive of Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, and Shmini Atzeres. And the parsha ends with the famous pasuk, Vayomer Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Kechol Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe. Moshe spoke to Klal Yisrael about all these yomim tovim, all the halachos, all the karbonos, all the musafim, exactly as Hashem had commanded him to. And the question is, and this is actually a much broader question than specific to here in Parshas Pinchas by the Yom Tovim, but I'll ask it now with regard to this. Kechol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe is used a lot. It's a pretty common phrase. Moshe did like he was told. Nishkoyach. So what's going on here? As opposed to all the times that Moshe didn't do what he was told? You know, what's the chiddush of the Torah teaching us that he did as he was told? And does this teach us anything in particular to the Yom Tovim? That's the question. So it looks like Rashi had the same question. He offers an answer based on the Sifri. He says that, of course, Moshe always did as he was told. It's not teaching us like a chiddush that this time he did as he was told versus other times he didn't. That's not what it indicates. So what does it indicate? Says Rashi, this statement, Vayomer Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Kechol Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe, is used throughout the Torah, not just here, Lahafsik Ha'inyan, to separate between two topics. So in this case, it's to separate between the Mo'adim in our Parsha, and then in Parshas Matos, the Parsha of Nedarim that we begin right afterwards. Hutzruch lahafsik tchila v'lomar shechazam Moshe v'amar Parshas Zul Yisrael. Before we move to Nedarim next week in Parshas Matos, the Torah needs to tell us that Moshe taught all of these halachos of the Yomim Tovim to Klal Yisrael first. Why? She'im lo came, because if this pasuk wasn't here, yesh b'mashma shelo amar lem zu. Because if we didn't have this pasuk, we'd have a havamina that Hashem told Moshe about the Moadim, but he didn't relay that information to Klal Yisrael. And then only beginning with Nedarim in Parshas Matos, Vayidaber Hashem El Roshei HaMatos of Nesrael Lemor, so that Moshe tells them about Nedarim, but not about the Yomim Tovim. So Kamash Malan, that Moshe told Klal Yisrael about the Yomim Tovim, and then move to the next topic about Nedarim, Zuk Rashi. So the Netziv picks up something interesting here from Rashi. The Torah seems to be going out of its way, Rashi seems to be going out of his way to tell us that Moshe spent a lot of time going over the halachos of the Moadim to Klal Yisrael, both the halachos of the Yom Tovim themselves, but also the karbonos and the musafim, a lot of detail on the moadim. So much so, says the Nitziv, Hilchos Moadim Haya Moshe Rabbeinu Mefarish Lekol Yisrael Yoser Mikol Parshio Shibatorah. There is more explanation and dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and Kol Yisrael on the topic of the Yomim Tovim, more so than any other topic in the Torah. We talk about it in Emor, we talk about it here in Pinchas, we talk about it later on in Re'eh. A lot of information, a lot of, you know, real estate in the Torah on the Yomim Tovim. It's a very direct statement from the Nitziv. So how so? How so? Says Nitziv, Moshe's description of the Mo'adim can be broken down, he says, into primarily two sections, here in Parshas Emor, right? And really, in Parshas Emor, you can connect with Re'eh in Dvarim, right? So earlier on, he says, Vinei b'Parshas Emor, Sayim v'idaber Moshe es Mo'adei Hashem l'b'nei Yisrael, Upirashnu al pi hagemor shenichol b'zeh shnei inyanim shekar Moshe parsha b'regel v'gam pirish b'chol moi livnei Yisrael hilchos v'agadotos ha'shayach l'fi mo'adim. In Emor, Moshe taught them all the nitty gritty details and halachos about every yontiv, and then he reteaches that all in Parshas Re'eh. Mashe enkein Parshas Musafim. This parsha, Parshas Pinchas, about the Musafim, lo nemra ad shnas ha'arboim la'achar achag. Versus here in Pinchas, we learn all about the Musafim, which the Nitziv says represents what? Lo ba ela lahorasam kavonas ha'mo'adim. The pnimius of the mo'adim, the kavona of the mo'adim, the inner secrets of Yomim Tovim. He says the sodos ha'torah, the secrets of the Torah, as he puts it. So says Nitziv, that's why the mo'adim are the most discussed topic in the entire Torah, because they're unique. They're unique. Moshe taught them the halachas of Mo'adim at the beginning of the 40 years, and then retaught it to them at the end of the 40 years, but not the same stuff. At the beginning of the 40 years, it was the halachos. At the end of the 40 years, it was the pnimius, the inner essence of what the Yom Tovim really are, represented by their musafim. And as Nitziv points out, that's crucial. Hema iker gadol lemusar van haga. So let's keep following the breadcrumbs. Don't worry, this is going to lead to something eventually. So what's unique about the Mo'adim, about the Yom Tovim, that, you know, how come, I understand, why does Moshe choose this topic, the Yom Tovim, to describe the Pnimius? Why did it, Dafka, the Yom Tovim, get this double treatment, the reteaching of Moshe Rabbeinu, not only of the halachos, but of the Pnimius, to make sure that everyone understood the Kavanas HaMo'adim, and why doing so is such an Iker Gadol L'Musar Van Haga, which is a pretty strong Lashon from the Nitziv. So the answer, I think, we're going to kind of connect the two. This is not one piece. Usually I take one piece and we just go through it. This is sort of a Frankenstein of several different ideas put into one overall idea. The answer, I think, comes from the Rambam. We're just going to read a Rambam. How are Yomim Tovim unique? How are the Mo'adim unique? And what is the deepest essence of Yom Tov? Look what he says. Look what he says in Hilchos Yom Tov. I'm on the last page now of the Mar Makomos for those following along, page above. When a person eats and drinks and has simchas yontiv, when a person is engaged in the mitzvah, when he's eating and drinking and being happy with family and friends, he needs to share. He needs to share that happiness with the ani and the ger and the almana and the yosom and so forth. So the pnimius of yontiv, says the Rambam, is the sharing. V'samachta b'chagecha, who? Ato v'incha v'techa, all right, that's easy. V'avdecha are getting a little harder. V'amasecha getting a little harder. V'alevi, v'ager, v'ayosom, v'almona, asher b'sherecha. Now it's pretty hard. That the simcha has to extend to people well beyond your inner circle of friends and family. Verse, let's go weiter in the Rambam. Aval Misha Noel Delosos Chatzero, V'ochel V'shoso, Hu, Vana V'ishto, V'enu Machil U'mashkel Aniyim U'lumari Nefesh, someone who closes his doors on Yontiv and just has family and friends and doesn't share his simcha with those less fortunate than him. The Rambam uses a very harsh lashon. Ein zu simchas mitzvah. This is not V'samachta B'chagecha. This is not a simchas mitzvah. What is it? Ella? Simchas kriso. It is a simcha of his stomach. So in other words, if we ignore our achrayas towards fellow Jews, our yontiv is transformed into a disgrace, into an egocentric, a simchas kriso. And this is unique to yontiv, right? There's no key. That's why yontiv, we ask the question, why does yontiv get dafka this double treatment of the halachos and the Pnimius, whereas other halacha, other and Yanim don't get this double treatment. That's why other halachas don't get the real estate in the Torah that Yontiv gets. That the Moadim get a tremendous, probably the most amount of real estate in the Torah of any mitzvah. And why is that? Because there's no kiyum of sharing when it comes to tefillin or mezuzah or other mitzvos that are bein adam l'makom. But v'samachta v'chagecha, which is a bein adam l'makom mitzvah, there is a condition to its kiyum, and that condition is spreading the wealth, spreading the simcha around to others who are less fortunate. So I think vis-a-vis the Rambam, we can explain Moshe's reteaching a Hilchas Yomtiv, the Musafim of Yomtiv, the Pnimius, the Sodos, the secrets of Yomtiv. What is it? What's the secret of Yomtiv? That we need to spread it around, that we need to spread the wealth. At least, in my opinion, I've always thought this, that nothing brings out the best of us as Jews more than Yontiv. Some people would say it brings out the worst of us as Jews, but that's just being cynical. I think that Yontiv brings out the best of us as Jews. And that's why the Mo'adim are the most discussed aspect, the most discussed topic in the entire Torah. Because our greatest potential as Jews for greatness lies there, in Yontiv. And therein, Moshe Rabbeinu retaught the halachos, dafka, that we should marinate in this a little bit, to think about this. The immense potential for Kedusha embedded within the concept of Yontiv. We see that very clearly, but it's only within the context of treating it the right way, to make those around us as happy as we are, and as close to Hashem, as connected to the regel as we are. So Mirat Hashem, we should all strive to do this a bit more. The next time Yontiv comes around, it's not too far away now, only a few months. And Be'ez Hashem Bizochet to all the brachos of the Moadim and true simcha, v'samachta b'chagecha, via this tremendous sod of the Torah, this tremendous secret of the Torah. And with that, I guess for the second time now, I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.